Welcome to the Jewish Diasporist, a podcast exploring the political, social, and cultural implications of life in diaspora. We are your hosts, Ben Yanowitz
and Zach Smarin. Since we began producing this show, Ben and I have always understood it as part of an organizing project, a way for us to bring insightful conversations from our ever-growing networks to a public audience.
Alongside the Jewish Diasporist, both of us have been actively organizing within our local communities, while remaining in dialogue with countless others doing this work across all scales. Although only a small percent of our organizing conversations end up on our show, this podcast has been a significant forum for discussing the many different backgrounds and perspectives that ground this work within the transnational context of our diaspora.
If you followed us for any period of time, you will no doubt know of our sympathy with the historical Jewish Labor Bund. See episodes 1, 2, 12, 32, and 43 in particular. In recent years, Jewish leftists have become more acquainted with the Bund, with many expressing the desire for the Bund to be rebuilt today as an international organization of social struggle, which of course is much easier said than done.
In case you haven't heard of it yet, an ongoing organizing effort calling itself the International Jewish Labor Bund began last year. It is still in an early phase and will require much structural work to grow. However, a start has been made with the election of a provisional steering committee. It is currently composed of both Zach and I and two other people, Hallie and Madden, who join us today. Please bear in mind that any statements made here are not made in the name of the IJLB, but demonstrate the kinds of conversations taking place as we lay the foundation for a democratic organization rooted in the grass.
If you are interested in Bundist organizing, this is the place to be. You can find the new intake form in the description. To get involved, you will be able to receive regular updates on the activities of the PSC via a weekly Bund bulletin. You will also be able to connect with like-minded Bundists in your local area.
As usual, we'd like to give a big thank you to all of our donors, supporters, and audience. If you like what we're doing here, please rate our show on your podcast platform of choice. It really helps us reach new people. Follow us on Instagram, at the Jewish Diasporist Pod, and hey, if you spam all of our posts onto your story, it can really help us reach into your networks and spread the word. Lastly, please consider becoming a donor on Patreon. Every donation, like, follow, and share helps us build a positive Jewish future and keeps this show on the air.
As this was a long conversation, and we wanted to release it on schedule despite organizing with the ferocity necessary to meet this pivotal moment, we edited this episode a bit less zealously than usual. We hope you understand. With a further ado, let's get into it. Brüder und Schwestern von Arbeit und Neut, alle, was seinen, zu seht und zu spreit, zusammen, zusammen, die von sie ist greit, sie flattert von Zorn, von Blut ist sie reut, a Schwue, a Schwue, a Fleben und Teut. Hallie, Madden, it's great to have you here. Today is a little bit of a different episode because while we have guests on, as always, we come to you as part of one organizing effort. While this is not something that we are doing as part of the Jewish Diasporist, we nevertheless think that it's crucial to the interests of our listeners to know about this effort and to potentially get involved. And so that's why we are using our platform to help spread the word about the Provisional Steering Committee of the International Jewish Labor Bund. Hallie and Madden, would you like to introduce yourselves?
Yeah, sure. I'm Hallie, she, her. I live in Missoula, Montana. Yeah, stoked to be here.
Yeah, and I'm Madden, they, them. I live in New York. I've always lived in New York. And yeah, I'm a member of the Provisional Steering Committee of the Jewish Labor Bund.
Hey, same.
I am also a member of the Provisional Steering Committee of the Jewish Labor Bund.
Well, me too.
Yeah. You guys are part of this?
Crazy.
Who would have guessed? So rather than just being like, we're the hosts and you're the guests, we are all going to be guest hosts in this because we really want this to be a conversation as we are the four members of the Provisional Steering Committee for this project. It's really important that we can be in dialogue with each other and not have any sort of hierarchies between us. Not that we ever have hierarchies between our guests and our hosts, though that being said, if there is, it's almost like we are far less talking than our guests because we really do like to uplift all the people we bring onto this because this show wouldn't be what it is without the really brilliant insight that the organizers that we bring on provide to our community and audience. But Hallie, Madden, Zach, and even for myself, what led you guys to get involved in Bund organizing and this particular project to revive the International Jewish Labor Bund?
Yeah, I was raised mostly by my mother and grandfather growing up, and a very close connection between me and my grandfather was talking about Jewishness, especially for me, who was raised as an atheist. Really, the only connection I had to Judaism was cultural. And so I was raised by my grandfather to not only be Jewish, but also a Yiddishist. He was a very, very committed Yiddishist. But as I grew up and started to read more of his stuff, because he was a journalist and writer, I started to notice a kind of troubling through line through a lot of it, where he would write for and only positive things about the state of Israel. And I remember distinctly from a pretty young age sending him articles and little things that I had written, trying to, fight back on some of the smaller issues that I had with his work. And we had some nice conversations about it. It was never too antagonistic, but that kind of loomed over me for a long time, the feeling that I was somehow like complicit in it or tangential to this defense of the Israeli project. And so for me, a big part of starting to get involved in radicalism generally, but especially Jewish radicalism, was me trying to break away from that and trying to make up some of the mistakes that I believe, the people in my past have made. And so trying to recategorize what Jewishness is outside of Zionism and trying to understand a lot of the radical interpretations of Jewishness became a very big part of my learning and eventually led me to be a part of the Bund.
Yeah, I guess I should go next, probably. I'm from an interfaith family, so my mom was raised Irish Catholic and did not convert my dad. I think at this point he considers himself a secular humanist Jew. And yeah, we were kind of raised in an area without too many Jews around and a lot of evangelical Christians. So for me, I always kind of my little way of rebelling against that was really embracing my own Jewishness and being really loud about it. And then, I got to go to college and finally get out of my hometown and, seek out my people. And I graduated college in 2015. So 2014 happened during all that, which some people remember, some people don't. It was another really awful full-on attack against civilians in Gaza. And I just remember I had not really thought about Zionism much growing up. It was like, oh, there's a country that has Jews there. Neat. Seemed like things are chaotic there sometimes. But, as I learned more, I was feeling uncomfortable, but felt like I didn't have room to really think through my views. By the time I graduated, I was kind of alienated from Jewish community for a while. I didn't personally stop identifying as Jewish or whatever, but it just wasn't really something that was part of the life I was building, if that made sense. So over the years, I did some general leftist organizing, especially once I moved to Missoula, which is where my family lives. Basically, my brother went to the university and we all gradually followed him, which thankfully he's okay with, I think. I hope so. Then, October 7th happened, and it was very clear, what direction things were going in as far as, how bad Israel's response was going to be. And I've always felt a responsibility as a Jewish person to educate myself on genocide and pay attention to it and, be ready to oppose it whenever possible. Same with fascism, since, they often go together. And from there, things started moving very quickly once I actually started dipping my toe into the anti-Zionist organizing. Basically, I started attending events with Montanans for Palestine, which is kind of our local Palestine Solidarity Coalition, which is all over the state, really, because there's only like 1 million people here total. So we all kind of coordinate a lot. There's a lot of cross-pollination between different cities and stuff, which is cool. So I now have a lot of friends all over the state, which is great. And turns out when you have a Montana version of a mass movement, which is you get 200 people at a protest, which is crazy. But actually, turns out that's when you get all the lefty Jews around. So I had kind of been trying to start a JVP chapter or pod, which we did end up going with JVP as well as the Bund. But one day I'm on Instagram and I see Montana Bund, what the hell is that? Because I had been taking Yiddish classes since that September. I knew about it. And so I just shot that account a DM like, wow, I've been trying to get a JVP thing going. I didn't think we could get this nerdy this quick. You want to meet up? I assume we've met. We had met. After that, we met up and that's how I started hanging with y'all. And it's been a crazy year since. How about you guys?
I don't actually know for sure if I have ever explained my connection or road into Bundism. Ben, you're nodding your head. I don't know if it's actually sort of outlined exactly where it came from. My father was involved in Jewish socialist organizing stuff with the JSG, which that's referenced all the way back to episode 3, back in the late 70s and 80s, interested in Yiddishist stuff. And while that's not something that he really continued on, it's not certainly anything that I was infused or let alone indoctrinated with when I was growing up. It was something that I knew was a possibility, Because that's just, you know, what came through in conversations every now and then, the importance of Yiddish as a historical and cultural possibility, the general openness of both my parents towards their, at the very least, liberal or progressive politics on social issues that stopped me from going down any particular rabbit holes. Although I did have, when I was a teenager, like a lot of insecure teenage boys, a anti-feminist phase. And so when it comes to that sort of stuff, there are some sympathies that I have from that sort of organizing, that that is something that certainly mustn't be neglected. But what was particularly important for my politics was the Bernie Sanders campaign in 2016. In a lot of ways, it was something that just seemed to me like it was addressing very key issues in a very clear way about healthcare, about minimum wage, about access to education. That seemed to me very obvious. On the environment as well, that's something that I was already previously quite interested in because I saw some educational videos when I was quite young. And that sort of started translating into interest in local organizing in Poland. But nevertheless, like, being Jewish, which was also part of my identity, was never something that I could connect in that sort of way. There wasn't any sort of discourse that was happening in that regard. Not until I had a teacher in high school of history who was particularly interested in the Middle East, that he specialized in, to an extent that we were learning about things in high school history that most people do not learn about in terms of their understanding of the Middle East and Israel-Palestine. And then I actually got the opportunity with my school to visit the West Bank on a trip for 6 days, actually, Nazareth, Nablus, and Bethlehem, in terms of where we stayed overnight, many other places as well. That formed my opinion in many ways. And I got involved in Palestine solidarity organizing at university. At the same time, me moving to university in Britain, whilst having had grown up in Poland, not knowing any Jewish people my age within the Jewish community. I knew Jewish people my age, but there was nobody who was active. There wasn't a youth club in the JCC at the time in Krakow or any other young people in the Reform community that I had my bar mitzvah. In one of the first local Reform bar mitzvahs in whatever sounds cool. And I went from that to encountering people from a Jewish communal environment that was very well established and very well entrenched in its mainstream perspectives on Israel. And I had just been off this trip to the West Bank. So I got involved in Palestine solidarity organizing quite early on at university. And the society, the Jewish student community at my first university, which was Warwick, had a reputation of being very pro-Israel. I don't like to say like it was Zionist because that can mean very many different things, but it had like Stand With Us campus fellows running the society. It was called the Jewish Israeli Society at that point. And I remember not really having that sort of interaction with the any sort of mainstream Jewish communal institutions. I had some Jewish family in Britain, but that's I didn't get much information from that. And just seeing that that is what it was not something that particularly interested me in the beginning. Not until I met some more people from the mainstream communal environment that were not that far gone, that were more to the left, that gave me the possibility of thinking, yes, perhaps there's a way of engaging in this space because I wanted to be involved in a Jewish communal environment that I didn't have access to being around Jewish people my age within a community in that sense. And that's what I did. And that was initially something that I looked at to a significant extent as a way of sharing certain political ideas around Israel Palestine, at least being a person within the community. Like that's something that I came in with. Today, if I hear someone say that, I think that you should probably avoid the idea that you are somehow infiltrating a Jewish community if you're doing something like that. I don't think you can infiltrate a community that is yours by all right. But once I started getting involved, I mean, there was, apart from like being connected to various other like political ideas that I had before, I started noticing certain things about how I thought that the community could be run in a better way or could be organized in a better way, or simply things that were never discussed, like a lack of Jewish culture in many, many different ways, a lack of exploration of Jewish art, literature, theater, music, etc. And the way in which my thoughts started to be was that this is something that can be addressed from a leftist Jewish perspective that is connected alongside all these other important issues, and one of them being, crucially, Israel-Palestine, and very closely the ideas around what anti-Semitism is today, what are its primary priorities, how to get involved in that way. And so that led me to somehow become reconnected to ideas of the Bund that I knew existed, but which I didn't consider practical in any way possible. At the same time, I was involved in an effort to rebuild the Polish Socialist Party through its youth organization, which of course worked historically together with the Bund. So if the PPS can be rebuilt, I remember knowing a few other people with a Jewish background within that. We started thinking of like having a Jewish group within the PPS, if not the Bund. And I remember at some point having encountered too many people randomly who had a Jewish background in Poland, the idea of, yes, you can have an organization of the Bund in Poland or with Poles around 2021, 2022. And I'll cut out, you know, a lot of the stuff that happened within the next year or two for simplicity, but I also got involved in the Jewish Socialist Group National Committee in Britain. And yeah, around last December, was it? After having had a chance encounter with Zalman, who was previously on an episode, not too dissimilar to the way that me and Ben met up, and you can hear about our sort of introductions in episode one if you want to go all the way back. On Instagram, having connected with Zalman, who was very publicly interested in Bundist organizing and such, Zalman told me, hey, there's this Bund organizing stuff that is happening. And for, you know, years at this stage, I was already thinking, oh my God, finally, after all of these Bundist or Jewish left organizations, they exist in all of these countries. Finally, America is the one. If something happens, it will be in America. Simply because of the size of the community, the organization that is possible, it was, I thought in the beginning, maybe we can start off with some sort of local state things that can happen and then something national. But no, this is an effort. This is finally happening. It's time to join and get involved. And I'll leave it at with that, because then I told Ben about it and Ben got involved.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like my own relationship of how I got involved in Bund organizing, we've probably covered mostly. Like, I started out as a left Zionist, also very much awakened to political consciousness through the 2016 Bernie campaign, realizing that being a socialist is not the same thing as being a liberal. And then going to college and having someone who was a friend very quickly call me out on the cognitive dissonance between my avowed socialism and my commitment to supporting the Israeli state as a Jewish state. And that began a process of mostly unlearning for a long time, of really feeling alienated from my Jewish identity. And I mean, I was studying history. I was also doing a Jewish studies minor, but even then I didn't really integrate these things until my second half of my junior year. During my undergrad, when I ended up forming what was an independent socialist organization on campus. We were talking about forming it as a YDSA chapter. That didn't end up happening. It still does exist after a couple years after graduating. But we realized there was actually a number of Jews in the organization, and we, two of which were my roommates at the time, and we ended up holding a socialist Shabbat. We only did one of them, and I wish we had done a few more. But that was like the first time that I'd started to really integrate my left-wing politics and my Jewish politics that were gradually coming into being. And then, of course, I had Laura Jaffe as a professor who's wonderful. And I was studying the history of the Bund finally my second semester, my senior year. And I realized that she had a Doikite tattoo on her arm in class one day, and I was like, oh my God. I came up to her and said, does your tattoo say Doikite? And she was like, yes, it does. Oh my God, you're the only student to ever read that. I've had people think it was Hebrew, but I was like, no, of course it's Yiddish. And that really started me down the path of realizing, oh, the Bund isn't just this thing in this history book. This is a movement that still does exist. As Zach said, it could be reorganized. It's just a matter of doing that work of building these relationships. And also, I keep using the phrase making Bundists, which is like a callback to this period in British labor history of making socialists, because I do think we have, especially now, a mass movement of Jews who are rejecting Zionism, and sometimes their politics stop at that as this anti-status. And Zach and I first initially connected of trying to translate Bundist ideas into the 21st century for the UJS conference. You can check out our episode 2 to discuss that. But when I did hear about the effort to revive the Jewish Labor Bund, which initially began as just an effort to build a Jewish caucus within the DSA in the United States, but very quickly moved beyond that and realized that it needed to have some international aspirations, I was like, this is obvious. At that point, I was already identifying as a Bundist, so it was just natural that I'd get involved in this organizational effort.
We could, if we wanted to, go on regarding the, you know, longer discussions of why this organizing started off, you know, at this point, you know, a year ago. Obviously, there are some political aspects as to why after October 7th, people thought that this is a time that this kind of organizing needs to take place. The real challenge that exists and has existed for anyone who say that they are a Bundist, that they would like to be involved in an organization that calls itself the Bund, who even just does Bundist stuff, is that, one, it has such a historical legacy, if you get into it, that if you want to do it justice, you inevitably, you know, you're humbled and you don't know where to start. You have people all over the world that are interested in vastly different contexts, people who do not know each other. The real challenge in this process has been to go from simply being a bunch of people who are interested in recreating a Bund, basically like blob of people that are non-line space, into actually having structures that can resemble that of an organization.
And perhaps being bound together like a Bund?
Yes, like an association. And obviously, when you look at the history of the Bund itself, it took time between the various different organizing efforts, years, in fact. The need for such an organization, getting people together, those are very different conditions than we have now, but the question of it taking time is of the essence. Unfortunately, that also means that certain people who want to, you know, get active immediately are not able to get active right away and get frustrated by the process, which is completely understandable. And if you are in a situation like now that actions need to be done now and you don't want to focus on very abstract things, it's always better to convince people to join an organization that is doing something, not an organization that is potentially doing something, then yes. But nevertheless, these are the kinds of things that you need. You need to establish, you know, legal fictions, you need to establish committees, you need to establish membership. And these are all things that we hope, as the Provisional Steering Committee, the first Provisional Steering Committee, may I say, because there is going to be an additional election in the near future, that we can do.
A thought that struck me listening to especially Ben and Zach is, are we all from like history backgrounds? Like, Madden, what are you?
I'm part history, part philosophy, and part theory. I got in through largely Jewish history and then kind of made my way through philosophy.
Yeah.
I'm history.
History, English, library science. But yeah, I guess just like, you know, obviously, like, we're all big nerds, obviously, and we're attracted to the Bund because it fits in our other interests. But I also know for me, like, the way that I kind of analyze the world or even like look for examples of things working or not working and organizing is often through history. It fits it into sort of a story that makes it easier for me to process than just like straight up theory or just like, you know, doing something in the now with no like knowledge of what came before. So I guess like with that in mind, since we're in this position to kind of revive this historic thing in a very modern context, what do we see as potential differences, potential pitfalls? How do we want to like take it from that nostalgia and history into, you know, our term is truly provisional. We're just getting the ball rolling and trying to build something that can outlast the four of us. So what do we want to kind of see by the end of that?
What I see is the goals, the central goals for the Provisional Steering Committee for the first 90 days, since that is a short period of time, is mostly just going to be to set up a structure, generally an organizational structure for the group to last longer. I don't think we're going to accomplish any of the loftier goals of a diasporic Jewish community aiming for a free Palestine and to work on Jewish movements throughout the globe. But I do think that a lot of what we can do is to just support any of our friends and comrades in the fight, any Jewish community that's looking to make a better world for Jews that isn't reliant on a statecraft, I think is a very big thing that we propose, an alternative to statism while remaining true to Judaism. We can start the ball rolling, like Hallie was saying, on trying to get that into a organized structure that leads people down the correct road going forward, instead of it just being a free-for-all, like, we're the wounded name, but we have no central ideology, no function for trying to figure out how to get stuff done. After a year of having struggling to get stuff done in a broad sense, I can say that without the organizational structures and the things we're creating now, it was largely impossible to get as many people as we have on the same page, doing the same things, fighting for the same cause. And I really think that our role is to kind of unite that and push it forward in a way that's productive, instead of just being, like Ben said earlier, just based on the negation of what already exists. We shouldn't be a negative force that's saying Zionism sucks and then moving on. We should be something that's trying to create a positive Jewish future for the world. And I think we're accomplishing that extremely well, and working toward that in our best way within 90 days, by trying to standardize the processes through which we can actually achieve that, instead of just making it a free-for-all with a unified goal.
I might add, this has been a project that's been going almost for a year at this point, which is kind of crazy to think about. And for a long time, when there was just people joining, but there was no direction, and people were organizing locally, but there was no general framework for local organizing to like filter into national or international leadership structures. So I kind of see the goal of our term as starting the process of building a standard practice for how local organizing and chapters can work, and really crucially, like thinking through how these structures can relate to a more central organization. And this is something that like is important for us to wrestle with what that might look like, because obviously we have a lot of diversity of perspectives, and just like how we understand socialism has many different perspectives, and that can lead to a lot of difficulties on what our end goals. But at the end of the day, we're here because we believe in building a better future, and we should be very clear cut of like what is the purpose of that positive vision and how it relates to all the different local organizations and local organizing efforts that are happening. Because I kind of see the goal of this current process of rebuilding the International Jewish Labor Bund as working to integrate the movement at an international level, which means local organizing is very important in terms of building to this level of being able to actually have an independent organization that's within the wider movement ecosystem. It's really important for us to think like, what is our own goal? Like, what is our contribution to the movement? And I would say, I mean, going back to the idea of making Bundists, like, it's really important for us to be there as an educational force for the movement that's much wider than just our organization to help and engage with this. And I mean, the word Deutschkeit, which is here-ness, is really central to Bundism as a set of ideas. And it's also gaining a lot of, like, not a lot, of course, obviously, all of this is pretty niche, but it is gaining traction within the wider movement as something that can ground us and to help us think beyond that negative anti-position and thinking about what we actually stand for. It's really important for us to get this ball rolling in a way that launches the organization in a good direction. It's so important that we take the time to make sure that this is done in a way that prevents abuses of power, prevents a toxic culture from dominating, which is so common in any centralized movement effort. Look at all the Marxist-Leninist organizations that have sexual assault allegations against them. I mean, it's really important for us to build at the grassroots level, but also to be thinking in really big, holistic terms about what we can do to have our organizing that we're doing through this effort to help lead towards an integrated movement at an international level.
Just really quick on the like topic of these organizations where there is abuse, that is something I think about a lot. This isn't exactly the question of where we want to be in 90 days, but I guess like I think a lot about the balance between like the sort of, local autonomous organizing, which is something I'm a big fan of. I think it's been really su successful out here in Montana. We've made some really cool connections. We've had some really interesting conversations about the relationship between like, Deutschkeit and land back. Like, what does Deutschkeit mean on stolen land? And, how do you come into, there's a phrase that I've heard some indigenous activists use, right relations. So, just kind of being a good neighbor while also, being yourself and rejecting the way that colonialism's impacted you and your relation to culture and stuff like that as well. So, I see a lot of commonality between, like, it's obviously not one to one because of, how the languages are erased, but Yiddish revival and indigenous language revival. There are at the very least like methods that we could absolutely learn from and how they work in actual lived communities. But yeah, I guess just on the topic of that, it's like that's really important. But also I think like I'm very into interrogating hierarchies and making sure that we don't have abuses of power, but we also need to be able to get things done. So I guess what I'm hoping is that we can sort of have like this body be central, not in that like we're commanding what everyone else is doing, but it exists as a resource. So for example, one thing I definitely would like is if there's like abuse going on in a local formation, I want there to be resources at the international level to deal with that, and kind of vice versa. Like, maybe down the line, hopefully we could have like training so that at least one person in every local has some kind of mediation training.
I also want to add, Hallie, you mentioned Yiddish, but I also think it's really important that we think beyond just Yiddish, because
Oh,
Yiddish is
absolutely.
one Jewish language, and yes, it is central to the historic Bund, but I think as diasporist, it's important to recognize that, like, there's many Jewish languages that also should be revived, should be revitalized, should be central in the cultural organizing of the communities that it's relevant to. And I think the Bund in the 21st century needs to resist Ashkenormativity.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe not just as much as it resists Hebraization, because Hebraization of Jewish identity has been really dominant in the last 70 years, but it's about like all the Jewish languages that have been erased.
Yeah, and like thank you for bringing that, because like I use Yiddish because that's what I've been learning. I also I mentioned I have Irish heritage. I would really like to learn Irish as well because that is something that was stolen from us by colonialism. But that's a whole tangent.
Hallie, you mentioned history earlier, that all of us have a history background, which is interesting. I think it's particularly important to stress that this is not a question of LARPing. The point is not that there was once an organization called the Bund, and that organization was cool, and therefore we should now get together and think about how cool that organization was. And this goes in particular towards the romanticization of the organization. Once an organization has been, in the eyes of many, long gone, long inactive, it's possible to interpret in better ways or worse ways whatever you want out of it. There are people that have sentimental values regarding the Bund, either from their families or as a history project, who are not political radicals, even liberals might be people who are sympathetic to the Bund. And there are anti-Zionist Jews who basically have no idea about what the Bund is and was and what vision it had, other than the fact that it was anti-Zionist in the way that they perceive that to be, which of course the Bund's program was very, very different to most groups and organizations that call themselves Jewish anti-Zionists today. And so these are not things that we can address. These are not things that we wish to address as some sort of leadership of organizing today. It's not within our power, nor should it be. The point is really that there are enough people who want to set up an organization, that there was an election, that we ran in the ways in which we could. As the as organizers of the Bund, to start this, which is organizing structural process, really bread and butter issues. And that's why I would also, on one hand, encourage people who are involved in organizing to not treat every single decision, in fact, really any decision, as the final one that is going to be made, to really encourage the starting off from simple things, and then bearing in mind that there's the possibility of always working on them in the future, not being afraid that we are not addressing everything at this time, and really also, since we mentioned the Marxist-Leninist organizations, little cults that exist of different variety, two things that are particularly important in that regard, in terms of historically how the Bund operated. And this is where things regarding history and how an organization functions are quite good to have, rather than just philosophical texts. Number one, the Bund never subscribed to an ideology of democratic centralism. In the Bund, you had open different currents that existed in terms of organizing. Their motions were published in various committee meetings and published in the press. And minority tendencies were able to publish their own newspapers publicly as such. And this was treated as a strength of the movement, not as a weakness. So if we are able to reorganize the Bund today, and we are able to get people involved in that way, because this isn't something that four people can do, then that those sorts of strengths will be have to played to. Another one was, of course, a federal structure of organizing historically within the Bund that the Bolsheviks were very, very opposed to. Something that, you know, in terms of the divisions, that I will just say, finally, in terms of practical focus, that's certainly something. I haven't talked about Café Bund as much on the Jewish Diaspora podcast as much as I want to, in terms of what Bundist organizing has meant in Krakow, in Poland so far. But certainly something that just I'll finish on is in terms of, you know, what potential differences we may have. Personally speaking, I'm a little bit skeptical towards the idea that we are building community per se, because in terms of what a community organizing is like, in terms of what sort of relations you have between people in that way, it is not exactly the same as a organizing of a political movement, political organization. There are different standards of behavior and relating to each other. Of course, you know, in terms of respect and such, that's always the same that needs to be taken into account. But that's something that I think is worth having a discussion that extends well beyond the meanings of both this episode and this PSC.
I think the point you raised, Zach, is really interesting, that it's like kind of not really community. I mean, it is community that we're focusing on, but we're not organizing community at an international level. And I think, Hallie, you also raised an interesting point of like, what does it mean for a leadership structure? We aren't trying to command and control. The word that the phrase that the historic International Jewish Labor Bund used for its upper level of leadership was the World Coordinating Committee. And I think the word coordination is really central to how I've been thinking of this, like, regional, national, international levels of organizing, because it's not that we need to reinvent the wheel. We aren't trying to just create another Jewish left organization, because frankly, especially in the United States, like, we have a lot of them. Like, we really don't need another one just for the sake of having one. It's really important that we're building something that is serving a different function, that ideally, in my head, would serve to coordinate amongst the many movements that already exist, whether they be JVP, if not now, Jews for Racial and Economic Justice, all the different local groups. And of course, we have a whole different side of things when it comes to religious, spiritual organizing that's happening, and that's really exciting and developing at the same time, parallel to this. But when we talk about the Bund, we have to recognize, especially Bund organizing today, we have to recognize that there is still one pre-1939 branch of the Bund. And actually, someone raised the question, because I know Bund branches were historically only those that were in what could be called Yiddishland, but there's a branch of the Bund that was founded in the late 1920s in Melbourne, Australia, and we interviewed the vice president of that organization for episode 12. But as we talk about organizing an international Jewish labor Bund, how would you guys like us to relate to the Bund in Melbourne, and what role would we like them to play in the process of rebuilding the international Bund structures that have historically existed?
Good question, because I mean, I know I've definitely organizing around here, you know, early on when people were looking up the Bund, because some people had heard of it, some people hadn't. So it's like you Google, like, okay, what is that? You know, like, we've been doing very explicitly, you know, anti-Zionist, like, you know, in solidarity with Palestinians facing genocide, like, you know, critiquing like the concept of a Jewish state, all that. And like, you know, you look at the Melbourne website, and at the time there was a statement, I think, about October 7th, but not necessarily about, you know, what came after. And, you know, like, we're in contact with Melbourne. And I think that, being able to talk these things out as Jewish people within our communities is important. I think one of the challenges and things that we should try to build into our international organizing is understanding that, like, we all live in different contexts. Like, this is an organization that has lived through a time of, Zionist hegemony. They exist within, like, a broader Jewish community in Australia. And then, like Ben, you bring up that there are so many leftist Jewish organizations in the United States. For me, literally, we like sat down and had a meeting with organizers in the broader Palestine movement because we were kind of between, okay, at some point, the Bund's probably going to become some kind of, more official organization. It might have dues. And there are 1,500 Jewish people in the entire state of Montana. So, divide that by however many leftists. There's only really room for one anti-Zionist Jewish organization in town because we're establishing one from scratch. So here it's like, we have that to negotiate versus like, things are going to be different in New York City where it's so Jewish over there versus Poland versus Santa Cruz. Like, and I mean, talking to like people in the South, people who are kind of like the only Jews around in their areas. So I don't know. I think it's one of those things that you kind of have to negotiate on like an org by org basis. So I guess I don't have a real answer, but I would like to continue working with them. And I hope that we can overcome any differences that we do have because they're nice people. Australia's neat.
Yeah, and I think that is actually a very good answer. Just saying that we all are doing our best to fulfill Bundism under our own conditions. I can look to New York's history and the General Jewish Labor Bund, which is different than, Vilna's Jewish Labor Bund, which is different than. We could link all these like different aspects of the Bund across the world, and largely it's what we're trying to do as an international body. But just accepting that there will be divergences in our understandings is a big part of trying to build coalitions and try to understand the broader Jewish context in the contemporary world, because we won't be able to align on every value we have with every group that we want to discuss, in Melbourne included. But even beyond that, there's way more Jewish institutions that believe way further things than what we believe in, who we are going to talk to and be in communication with and try to work toward common understandings with. With that being said, there will be lines, and we're not going to be passive on those. I personally, speaking for myself, I'm not going to be quiet or like let people talk about. I can think of 30 examples off the top of my head that I don't want to mention, but just small divergences in our understandings of where we are currently aren't going to become the difference makers between whether or not we will organize an effective international body or not. Because at the end of the day, our goals are the same, and it's to build a better Jewish future for the Jewish world. And right now, that Jewish world looks dire. It's in an awful state that we need to start to work together toward building a better future for. So I would love to work with Melbourne for that. I will work with Melbourne for that, and I'll work with a many, many, many awful, many, many, many other groups who are going to be doing that alongside me. And I hope that we can overcome some of our differences during that discussion and work toward aligning our values a little bit more.
So I probably here know the I have had the earliest contact with people in Melbourne at any given stage, because I've known people in Melbourne and spoken to them for the last 3 years. When I first started getting interested in, there is a Bund in Melbourne, can you reach out? Like, is there any sort of connection? Back when I was just one guy with some ideas regarding Jewish socialist stuff. And yeah, there's a few things that I would like to point out. And I would also like to mention this because we had a Q&A before our election, and there was a question specifically around Melbourne and as well just generally Bundist organizations, because while Melbourne is the only organization of the Bund that exists today, there are still organizations that have some sort of Bundist heritage of some sort or another. And there's a few certain things that I would like to mention. The first thing is that the Melbourne, through its organizing, has undeniably gotten itself the right to call itself the Organization of the Bund. They are the Bund, uninterrupted. They have managed something that no other organization was able to do, right? They were able to continue that legacy, and they were able to have a very important local impact. The only Yiddish day school that exists in the is the only Yiddish secular day school that exists in the world exists in Melbourne. That is not a coincidence. When it comes to the impact that you have in a local community, there's other things that you can point to. We mentioned indigenous organizing as well. There was recently a referendum in Australia to have a indigenous voice to parliament, and the Bund was very active in that area. Unfortunately, the referendum failed. Now, when it comes to a lot of the political questions that people might have, the Bund in Australia is not a radical socialist organization, as you might have. In many ways, it is a family organization. People are involved in the Bund in Australia very likely because they had family members who were involved in there. That's also the reason why they have such an active youth movement. I don't think this is an insult, but what it means is that the Bund in Australia, in Melbourne specifically, never gave itself the task towards rebuilding the Bund as an international organization. And as much as they maintain contacts and much as they're supportive, that is not the reason for their existence. And so, and also likewise, what is worth mentioning is that they have had people reach out to them, or they have seen people that have commented on the legacy of the Bund, and do so in a way that betrays really a lack of historical nuance in particularly understanding the Bund as just being anti-Zionism. And since that's the only way in which they go to it, if you are from their perspective, you can also be quite skeptical if they just want to say, we are recreating the Bund, we are this, we are that. Likewise, I'll also say that if we don't want to just be a bunch of people calling ourselves we are the Bund, these sorts of connections are quite important. And so this is certainly an argument that I would make in favor of that sort of connection. And also, when people say Melbourne thinks this, Melbourne doesn't think one thing. Melbourne is made up of many different people, and likewise, there are divisions in terms of what organizing Bundist ideas today have in that sense. Likewise, these are things that apply as well to various organizations like the workers' circles and the Medem Center, for example, in Paris, which I credit indirectly towards inspiring to a lot of Bundist organizing because my father lived in Paris, and a lot of the books that he has in Yiddish about the Bund come from there, even though I've never been there in person. So generally speaking, I am quite a strong advocate of connecting with the Bund in Melbourne for these various different reasons. Are there things that I would criticize the Bund over in terms of what they could be doing better? Yes, absolutely. I think that they could have done more in recent years towards reaching out. I think that there is, while there is there are time differences, there are distances in general, there are certainly ways in which they could have done that more. Were a lot of those appeals that I made to them the result of just, a 20-something-year-old kid? In that perspective, yes. Is there some th stuff that there could be done that could have helped our structural organizing here better that could have helped with? That's also true. But I would very much caution against some sort of, at this stage, like I mentioned earlier, we are in a very, very early organizing stage. These are connections that we need to cherish. We would be in a much worse situation if the Melbourne Bund did not exist today, and they still do a lot of good work. And there are criticisms there. There are criticisms about how they have positioned, or at least the certain lack of, one might say, urgency and organizing specifically in the situation, in the genocidal violence of the Israeli government in Gaza. I don't think that the lack of adopting certain rhetorical terms is necessarily an indictment of politics, and I would strongly caution people from that assessment.
One more really big question that I'd like us to discuss. It's called the Jewish Labor Bund, and it's always been tied to the labor movement. And arguably, I think that might be one critique we might have of Melbourne, because while it is historically in favor of the Labor Party in Australia, as far as I'm aware, there's not really any effort to revive the kind of Jewish labor movement that the Bund historically was. It was seeking to be the representative of the Jewish people in the global labor movement. That's what the Bund was doing when it was initially founded. And of course, there's critiques of the Ashkenormativity of that and the other things we've thought a lot about, and of course. But I was wondering if you guys had some thoughts on what does it mean to organize a Jewish labor movement in the 21st century, and what might that look like? Because obviously, conditions are very different from the world that the Jewish Labor Bund was organizing in 1897.
I think just noticing those differences in our modern age and trying to work toward a better understanding of the mistakes that were made in the past is a big part of that. But I also think another large part of it is something mentioned in your Westward to Zion episode with Dr. Caroline Luce. I'm sorry if I'm mispronouncing, but the way that not just the Shoah, but also the State of Israel created a very different perspective for Jewish leftists, where they were no longer able to participate in the same way they used to, or for the same reasons they used to, and having to kind of split the Jewish world along lines of not only like the statist, anti-statist question, but also more generally just where Judaism is placed inside of the labor movement. If we're proletarians, especially in America, which is a big part of trying to redefine Jewish relationship to Israel and outside. But even stuff like, we can see the question being asked well before that, between different communities in diaspora trying to communicate with the way they link to their culture, their heritage, without having to live in the place where they would be considered a part of it by everyone. And whether or not that makes you less or more, or the same amount of the thing that you are, for us Jews, for other groups, it would be, other kind of identity labels. But for the relation between Judaism and labor movements, I think that Judaism has always been extremely radical. I think even in its initial creation, monotheism was not something that was widely accepted, and it already had to update a lot of the theological questions. And from there, we've really kept that tradition alive. There's been an overwhelming amount of support for leftist institutions and the attempt to create a leftist future from the Jewish world. I could list names, but I don't have to. You know it. Like, we can see it in even the modern age. Our position on labor movements has always been important, and we're kind of just picking up the mantle. We can do with it as we want, but a large part of that is just getting back in there and saying, no, we've been here, we've been fighting for the right stuff, and we are kind of tired of being downplayed as anything less than a huge mover of social change, which we have been. Jews have historically always been. And that's not to say that we haven't made mistakes. There's a lot of Jewish history that I would look back on and frown on, obviously. But by and large, it's a lot of just reclaiming our ability to influence the world and understanding our position within it. And I think that the revival, like Ben was mentioning earlier, of Doikite and diasporism more generally is a huge step toward that in the Jewish world, just trying to create a space for us and understand our position within the modern world. And so, yeah, I think that's really where we go with the labor movement, just trying to understand our position within the contemporary world and trying to understand how we can influence it and improve it for, our future and for ourselves.
Yeah, no, I have so many thoughts about this. I think that you see sort of the way that, just obviously this is so much beyond just the past year, but because of the extremity of the past year of just absolute horrific genocide in Palestine, that, all of us being, people who live in the quote unquote West, our institutions are, if not tacitly supporting, actively funding and supporting with, our labor that is being taxed, like all these conversations around boycott, divestment, sanction. I think that, we're starting to see both people understanding the real utility of a general strike besides, tweeting out about it and hoping people, or I guess now it'd be skeeting about it because that's where all the cool kids are. There's a real lack of organizing capacity for the sort of, mobilization that this moment needs. And You see it in universities a lot with, people being fired or often expelled, which, I mean, there's a lot to say about, I don't know, the fact, the weird position students have as both labor and kind of a customer, but in a way where it's very exploitative anyway, because you kind of need this to get into the labor market. That's a whole thing. I mean, but yeah, you look at that, you look at the threats to the NLRB, you look at the bills coming up that are threatening, various anti-Zionist groups' nonprofit status. You look at just how hard it is to be a Jewish person who is vocal about Israel, working for Jewish institutions, both secular and cultural. And I think that, all of these are things we can agitate around. And these are things that, if you're not already on board with Palestine, you can get people there by speaking to them about, the ways that some mainstream unions are lacking. That's not to say all of them are. There are a lot of unions that do wonderful work, but the fact of the matter is, a lot of union organizing in the United States, at least, is sort of it's been captive since around, what, 1930, whenever the Wagner Act was. I live in Montana. The IWW is it looms large in our history. So, that was kind of the first thing that really like killed that more like, really like ground up like non-hierarchical union organizing where you're not like asking to come to the table to negotiate, you're demanding. So I think we really have a role to play in all those places.
And just to speak very briefly on the precarious position of students in the labor movement and also just in our general movement right now. For me, especially as a CUNY student, we have been fighting very hard to try to CUNY is City University of New York, for anyone who doesn't know, in case, because I know this is global. But right now we're facing not only like direct attacks from the existing structures, like the Chancellor Matos, we were just doing a big protest that I'm not going to go into detail for, but including him, including any administration at Hunter CCNY, at basically everywhere, we are put into this position where we're asked to not only be quiet, but also to pay directly to the colleges to then send that money on projects that continue the oppression of Palestinians. But we're also told that any amount of recourse that we try to hold on them, any time we try to go out and talk about it, it's immediately dismissed, and told that we're not only ungrateful, but that we should be arrested, that we're disrupting a student life, that it's just a constant threat. And a lot of this goes back to the like intersectionality of what we're doing, trying to say that our cause is not only the Jewish cause or the labor cause, but to say that this affects all of us in all of our dimensions. And we can't approach this as just a one issue problem. I think that labor organizing is a really big part of that because we've already introduced the ability to fight in multifaceted ways in labor movements that we haven't been able to do in something like general student movements or general Jewish movements in the same way.
Yeah, and I might just say, just to correct Hallie, the Wagner Act is actually the one that created the NLRB. It was
Yes,
Taft
yeah. Oh, yeah,
Hartley
that was
that
my
then
point.
undermined the Labor Act. So I actually saw Wagner
Well,
as kind of opening things up in terms of labor law. I'd love to hear your take on that.
yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, like, historically, it's coming in the wake of, like, sort of the Palmer raids, like the crackdown on these, really, like, radical anarchist unions, like a lot of, anarcho-syndicalists. That was kind of the big boogeyman before, sort of more the 1920s into the 30s, where, like, it's not to say that I'm like rooting for the downfall of the NLRB. I think it's really bad if you take people's safety nets away, but it's also important to acknowledge that it was a form of elite capture from very effective, like very militant union organizing. And I think that, like it was the sort of thing like, I mean, Emma Goldman, I don't think was ever a wobbly, but like, there were a lot of like it was just in the air in the United States in a way that really terrified the hell out of the ruling class, the owning class. And the New Deal in general was kind of a compromise with the labor movement where it's like, okay, guys, Could we not maybe have a violent revolution here? If we give you like the ability to just negotiate with your boss instead, then we can chill, which where you fall on that depends on what you think of the long-term consequences, I guess. But yeah, that's kind of my perspective on it.
Totally. I think that is really good analysis. I think it's really important for us to, one, recognize that like we should be against the fact that like Elon Musk and some of the billionaires are trying to get rid of the NLRB, which would push us back to like the Coal Wars era of labor insurgency in this country.
Yeah, and Trader Joe's, which like,
And Trader
man,
Joe's. Yeah, it's real
which they're also
depressing.
not in Montana, so screw them.
But just to bring us back to the topic of Jewish labor organizing, I have some ideas because I do think we talked about this in, we'd have done two episodes on Jewish labor organizing, and one of the ideas that came out of it so far was the idea of organizing the Jewish labor movement as like a inter-union rank and file movement as a way to kind of integrate the labor movement more fully, because we do have like industrial unions, which are unions that try to organize across entire industries. There's the general union model, which is a union, one big union, as the IWW is for. But then there's also just like a single shop, single company union, which is much more of the model that's become more dominant these days. And I do think when we think about the possibility of organizing like a Jewish rank and file movement, this also like flies in the face of the Jewish Labor Committee, which is the official Jewish representative within the AFL-CIO in the United States. But I think that isn't a rank and file movement. It's not a movement of people pushing their own unions to take a more activist stance on things and to work together within the wider movement. And I think that for me is where I see a Jewish labor movement could thrive and actually help to integrate the movement more fully and therefore help us go beyond the really constraining effects that labor law has had, and especially in the United States, but most of the world.
I generally take quite a hard line on this stuff because for me, whether you call it socialist or not, whether it's like progressive organizing, whatever, if it doesn't have labor as one of its core points, it's not down to earth. It's not, I don't think it can be truly considered Deutschkeit. That's not the only issue. I think that when as almost as important in our day and age to issues of where we work and issues of who we are is issues around where we live. And so issues regarding housing rights and tenancy and the way in which our cities are and urban areas, maybe even rural areas, though in the case of Jews, we're talking about urban areas overwhelmingly. These are things that have to be at the root of particular organizing. There is, I the reason why I say hard line in particular is because I strongly reject the idea that Jewish labor organizing is somehow something that is archaic or historical or fantastical. It's if you try to make the argument that, oh, there isn't such a thing as a Jewish working class anymore. First of all, these are points that were made around Jews not truly being part of the working class in the true Marxist sense 100 years ago. It's always Jews that are somehow different in this way, right? This is part of the socialist Zionist critique of Bundism, of course. And then also, there isn't the working class in this sort of traditional way. The argument as to whether it ever existed, put aside, this isn't something that exists today. If you want to say that there isn't a Jewish working class, there isn't a working class in general. But what labor politics means today is going to have its own. It's going to be different. But the question as to, whether financial material condition have an impact on whether Jewish people can truly work towards their cultural and communal fulfillment, whether the Jewish culture that exists today is impacted by that, whether the organizations of the Jewish community are connected. Of course, this has an impact. The people who are able to, for example, set up the Bund or set up a Bundist organizing from the very scratch. Of course, there is a class. Or at the very least, material connection to that, right? So these are things, as to whether Jews are, you can make the point if you really want to try and go into the statistics or economic statistics of all of these things. When it comes to, Jews being disproportionately wealthy, if you want to be charitable and say that this isn't from some sort of like either anti-Semitic directly or internalized view that Jews are not, don't have material wealth problems. If you look at the only real statistics that exist from this, which are from the United States, again, which is not the entire Jewish diaspora, there's not much of it in that regard. Because, you have these things always have to be offset about, where do Jews live? Oh, they live in the most expensive parts of the world. Are there specific expenses to when it comes to being when it comes to being Jewish, if you want to go into like being kosher, sending your kids to a Jewish private school, a synagogue membership, are you from a mixed family? Then does this all fall on one person, or is that a barrier in and of itself? Of course, these are things that need to be discussed, and of course, the question as to the support of American corporations primarily and the American government towards. The Israeli governments and the Israeli army, these have labor bases in and of themselves, and we have seen historically as well as the current war that workers do have the power to workers do have the power towards stopping the war machine and the military industrial complex. We've seen dock workers refuse to load cargo going to the Israeli army. We've seen the Palestinian General Confederation of Trade Unions, I'm forgetting the exact acronym, put out a call in this regard. So these are absolutely things that connect in all sorts of different ways. And it's important for us as well. And this is my final point. And if you want to hear more about this, then I've covered this in a short from episode 21 with Laura Jaffe and Ali Flores. But it's important for us to also say that based on the factors that I mentioned here, is that we are Jews and Jewish labor organizing is not supposed to be an allyship. Oh, at least not only. We are not allies in labor organizing. We want to organize, this is my belief, we want to organize within the Jewish community. That also means labor organizing within Jewish communal institutions, but it means that we have concrete measures as Jews, towards labor organizing for us, for our benefit. And we want to organize as an autonomous but not separatist part of the labor movement. And so this is something that personally I think we need to stress. And this is what, I think will be very beneficial towards organizing in the near future. Certainly not as the PSC, we're far too early for that. But that's something that I believe very strongly about. And I'm probably going to expand either in spoken or written form in the near future.
To your last point, Zach, have you ever read the essay Accomplices Not Allies?
No, but the book that very much in sort of inspired me to this was a book by a Black Irish author, Emma Dabberry, What White People Can Do Next. Which was about this sort of discussion between allyship and coalition, and likewise, there is a book that was, oh, sorry, there's an Indigenous Australian activist, to bring it back to that as well. There's a quote that's directly, or that's often taken, which is more or less, I always butcher it, but if you have come to help me, then you are wasting my time. But if you are saying that your struggle is intertwined with mine, then let us work together. I think that's something that as well, we are not, as Jews, we are not allies. We are not the former persecuted minority that is now either settler colonialists or upper middle class whiteies in the Western world, right? I think we need to, generally speaking, we are not. We have our own interests in these as well. That doesn't mean that these are the only in interests that we need to speak about, but we need to talk about how the current status quo of, the institutionally dominant Zionism that we see in mainstream Jewish communities, the general socioeconomic system that we have right now, how they have a bad impact for Jews. How they have a bad impact for Jews and in their material conditions, and how we are the ones who can supply some of the answers that no one else is talking about. And we are able to convince people. We are not just within our own ideological bubble. That's a very important thing about the Bund as well. The Bund managed to convince, in the interwar period, the majority of Polish Jews to its side. It became the largest Jewish political movement in Poland. And I see no reason as to why the precepts that a modern Bundist organization can have cannot do the same in that way.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, you know, sort of like, I think there's kind of a unique perspective that Jewish people have as like a religious and cultural minority. And, you know, we can talk about like the intersection of Jewishness and whiteness in America, because oh boy. But it does give you sort of like an in-between way to sort of like see ways that, like, I don't know, in American culture, everything about the way things work is so dominated by specifically Protestant Christianity and a very particular sort of, you know, like, you know, the Protestant work ethic is something that gets spoken about a lot. But it really is like, you know, Christians gave up their public festivals and things like that, so that, you know, now it's just like, you know, Christmas used to be like long, like raucous parties and stuff and almost a carnival attitude. And, you know, then it kind of became now this very commercialized thing, not just because, you know, they've forgotten Jesus is the reason for the season, but also like it was too scary and radical for, you know, specific like Puritans like Cromwell and stuff. And I think sort of like, you know, helping people see like, you know, or like reconnect to those roots in the way that we're kind of trying to do, like, you know, we've got our Doikite that we're practicing. Lots of different cultures have those concepts. And I don't know, a thing that keeps coming up over and over in my local organizing, in the international organizing that we're doing, is that, you know, we all have very different contexts that we're working within, very different people around us who influence the ways that we work. But also we have so much in common, and that includes both our struggles and the things that we want to celebrate about each other. I mean, literally right down to, you know, I've got a friend in Gaza who I'm working on a fundraiser for locally. And, you know, she and I will talk a lot just about, you know, things that are similar in our cultures, just because, like, it comes up. And it's nice to sort of use that, like, connecting to the things that make you and your people unique to sort of connect with the things that are the same about others and still celebrate the things that are different. And I think we can bring that into labor too. Like, I don't know, I think there's a sort of tendency that a lot of leftists have to sort of forget, like, the kind of the soul of what leftism can do for people, where it's like, you know, we need to keep it material, like, you know, we like, you can't have religion in this, blah blah blah. It's like, I don't know, we need room for people to be weird, fun, bizarre, like super varied human beings. Like, I think that's sort of what Bundism can bring to the table and to the movement.
Absolutely. I think what you just said of like, it's, I mean, one of the earliest critiques I saw of like why the Bund wasn't allowed to join like the Second International was because they were like, oh, if there's a Jewish representative of the International Workers Movement, then we'd have to have a Christian representative. And it's ignoring the fact that, like, I mean, the Jewish community, as much as like I don't like the term ethno-religious, it's just different. It is not the same thing. And it's also important for us to recognize that the Bund historically was entirely secular, if not outright anti-religious. And the people that are currently involved in organizing this, that's not exactly the case. There's definitely a lot more heterogeneity of people's relationship to Judaism as a religion, as a spiritual practice. And I think that's really good. I mean, we are seeing a world that is a world that is just flying towards fascism and like Christian extremism, Muslim, like all sorts of religious extremisms. And it's really important for the left to actually engage with spiritual and religious practices, because I think if we don't do that, we're just conceding this entire realm of human experience to the right. And that's one of the biggest mistakes we could make as the left, because if we don't engage with this, I mean, there's liberatory theologies in Christianity, Judaism, Islam, I'm sure Buddhism and all these different faith practices, spiritual practices have liberatory undertones in them. And if we are not lifting those up and encouraging people to engage with those, we're just kind of missing a huge point. And I think that's one of the things that the Bund can do, which is, I mean, different from its historic, which would be to engage with that and also recognize that Jewishness, Judaism, whatever we want to call it, looks like many different things to many different people. Some people are outright atheists and hostile to religion in any form, and some people are maybe even Orthodox Jews. And of course, everyone's going to have a different approach to this, and it's really important for us to be embracing the widest possible variation of what it means for people to be Jewish.
Yeah, and to kind of respond to both Hallie and Ben, a very big part of what Hallie mentioned with Protestantism and how that's really a basis for a lot of our current life, the left not engaging, or the broad left, whatever, not engaging with religiosity is kind of a myth, because you can't exist in the modern world without engaging with religiosity in one way or another. There's an incredible, because you guys recommended something I have to do, there's a article called Sex Plus Freedom Equals Regulation Why. It's a little bit hard to find, but it's mostly about gender discourse and the way it is influenced by Protestantism, but talking about the ways that even our conception of freedom, our you know, Enlightenment values, are all largely from secular Protestant backgrounds. And we are engaging with that every day by just living in the world we live in, not taking our own role in it and saying, hello, we're Jewish, this is what we believe, we want to fight for a Jewish future, is just kind of ceding ground to the passive status quo adaptation of other religiosities that are going to lead us down paths that we don't agree with. And unless we have a voice saying, hey, this is what we think, this is what we should do, we're going to just fall down the exact same rabbit hole that led to the fascism uptick that we're seeing right now. And so I think that largely, as a Jewish-based organization, something that we can really champion and try to push is the broad acceptance of Jewishness as a thing you can be regardless of your heritage, regardless of your mother's ethnicity or your father's ethnicity or whatever. We don't need a through line to connect every Jew. We just need Jewishness in the abstract to unite us. And so, like, that's something I very much want with Jewish labor movements in the 21st century, to push that to the forefront and to say that that is generally what we want Jewishness to mean. It isn't possible to do in an irreligious way or a historical or a cultural way. This is going to be a part of us. And I think we're doing a great job of trying to prioritize that and make that clear without having that be our entire proposal.
As an unbought mitzvah, patrilineal Jew, God, I hope so. And I guess just one quick caveat to what I said earlier, I should specify white Protestant Christianity, very specifically white Protestant Christianity. Like, I do not want to erase the incredible radical work that Christians of color do in the States and, you know, around the world where Christianity is occasionally marginalized. So putting that in there.
And on that note, on discussing who is a Jew, which is a question that always has a clear answer, let's leave it at that for now. There is a lot of work that can be done. We hope that if you have listened to the whole thing, thank you. And also, if you are interested, please, please get involved. There are ways of getting involved. There are ways locally. There are ways transnationally. There's a specific Airtable sign-up form that will be in the description. And please, we welcome all feedback, bearing in mind that we are not the quote-unquote leaders of any of this. We are just doing our little bit to get the ball rolling, as Ben has mentioned a few times. And yeah, that's basically it. Thank you so much to Hallie and Madden for joining us today. And we will be hearing more on Bunde stuff. You'll be hearing more from the PSC if you choose to get involved. And thank you so much, and Chaverschaft.
Thank you for having us.
Chaverschaft. Brüder und Schwester von Arbeit und Neut, alle, was seinen zu seht und zu spreit, zusammen, zusammen, die von sie ist greit, sie flattert von Zorn, von Blut ist sie reut, a Schwue, a Schwue, a Fleb und Teut. Immer und Erd, wenn uns ois Herren, ey, das wird sein, die lichtige Stern, a Schwue von
schwer von Tränen, mir schweren, mir schweren, mir schweren. Mir schweren a Freiheit und Grenzen zum Bund, nur erkennbar freien, die Sklaven sind, die von die Reute ist heuch und breit. Sie flattert von Zorn, vom Blut ist sie reut. A Schwur auf Leben und Tod. Himmel und Erde werden uns als Herren, ey, das wird sein, die lichtige Sterne. A Schwur vom Blut und a Schwur von Tränen, mir schwer. Mir schweren, mir schweren, und a Schwur von Tränen, mir schweren, mir schweren.